Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also, you can always listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. And special guest today, podcast legend, Jesse Corwin.
Oh, special guest. Sick. All right.
Podcast legend. I want to get legend. That title next to that's, me, too. That's a nice one.
That's a lot. I'll take that.
It's well-deserved. Go check out Celtics Express.
Not the latest one, because he's going to talk about the Pacers losing to the Celtics. So don't listen to that episode. Listen to every other episode.
Yes, we're out almost every morning after Celtics games when I can get around to it. So check us out at Celtics Express and, of course, on the website, OTG Basketball.
Also, check out Corey's podcast, Full Access Hoops. That's a little bit more laid-back NBA talk, but we're going to give Corey a little bit more love, too. We're going to talk about his 2017 NBA redraft article. So Corey went through all 30 picks, redrafted the first round. Today, we're just going to talk top five, though. So if the draft changed, knowing what we know now, who would the Sixers take with the number one pick in the draft?
I'll start it off since I did this article, which was a lot of fun to do. A little bit time-consuming. But I had a blast being able to finally sit down with no like schoolwork hanging over my head and being able to put out some content. And I think if we had the first pick being drafted over again, I think Donovan Mitchell would be in the Sixers uniform right now.
Wow. Wow. Donovan Mitchell. And where did he go in the original draft?
13th.
In real life.
13th to the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, what a fantastic pick. He's put up 40 already in his rookie season. He's been awesome and definitely the shot in the arm the Jazz needed after kind of a rough offseason. And so that's pretty cool. You know, as we've talked about, I cover the Celtics. So for me, Jason Tatum's got to be up there. He's been awesome this season, of course. Ben Simmons in the back of my mind. He's not from this draft class, but still eligible for that. Markelle Fultz, I mean, you know, we don't know what's up with him, what's up with his shoulder, et cetera. He still hasn't played. So the Celtics and Danny Ainge, he said locally in Boston before the draft, same guy at one as we were going to take at two, as we took at three. And that, of course, is Tatum, and looking pretty genius for that right now. But I can't hate on the Mitchell pick. He's been awesome.
Yeah, I think it's a good toss-up between Tatum and Mitchell, but I would probably go with Mitchell because I think the Sixers are looking at guard play. Obviously, Ben Simmons and Embiid probably are your power forward center. Sark is good. Covington is good. So you kind of got that three, four.
I mean, Nick, Tatum's playing the two. He's playing the two, the three. He started at four for the first time this week. I mean, he could absolutely fill up a two spot or a three spot and shift some guys. I mean, if you like a guy, I think, you know, in positionless basketball that we're in these days, you got to take him. But yeah, I feel you on the fit. I think Mitchell.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think he could play the two. You're right. But I think he'd be best off at the three or four. And I also love Mitchell. I think Mitchell, he would just give them that extra edge in that backcourt, that scoring punch they need. Right now, they need that ISO score, somebody who can just go get a bucket.
Plus, they have Covington and Sarcik. So, I mean, you have like enough taller wing players that, you know, Redick is on that 1 year deal. Who knows if you actually bring back Redick? And if you actually drafted Donovan Mitchell, you would still have a shooting guard for the future if you wanted to go away from Redick.
But moving to number two, who would the Lakers take with the number two pick? So let's just assume Donovan Mitchell's off the board now.
Oh, man. So – Oh, go ahead, Corey.
Yeah, I think they go with Lonzo still. I don't think Magic Johnson misses the chance to get that star point guard because I still think the hopes of L.A. still lies within getting Paul George and LeBron James in the offseason, how outlandish that may be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's two different aspects there. You talk about, like, the future, and there's always kind of the osmosis effect of, like, when you get a guy, can he bring another guy in? And that's one interesting thing. I think the Lakers, it's just this Lonzo Ball and the Ball family as a whole is just fascinating, right? It brings, like, this kind of entertainment world into the NBA even more, which we love, like, even, you know, like Carmelo and Lala have problems. Like even diehard, hardcore NBA fans are like, what's going on? Like, is he cheating? Like, so like people love this kind of crap. And Lonzo Ball and the Ball family brings this whole thing to the Lakers. And so I still like inside my head, like Magic, if he could go back, would he change it? You know, they recently made the quote unquote LeVar Ball rule. And you watch games on TV. It's like, I mean, he's like Spike Lee times 10. You see him in the front row. He's like running up and down the row, like slapping hands, like in front of play, like bumping by officials. It's crazy. And I don't know. I wonder in my head, is was there pressure to take him? Like, I mean, Magic vocally is like said he really believes in him, said some crazy stuff when he was drafted, comparing him to himself and Laker greats, et cetera. And he's been awesome this season. I mean, his shot is it's embarrassing. And, you know, I coach middle school and high school basketball, and sometimes you see kids that are right-handed. They dribble, they bring it up along, you know, the opposite thigh, and then flip it from one side of the ear back to the other as they're going up. Their base is all – it's crazy. I mean, but that being said, the guy's been amazing. Certainly controls the flow of a game, and he makes all those passes that you watch a lot of other point guards, and you're like, why don't you just make that pass off the pick and roll? The guy's wide open. Why can't you see that? This, that. He seems to see everything. And so long story short, say Mitchell's off there. You know, going into the season, there was some doubts about Ingram. So I think Tatum would be a huge fit for them, et cetera. But Ingram has really come on and looked pretty good this season. He's put on some weight. So now he weighs, you know, whatever, 110 pounds. But yeah, I'll say Lonzo Ball there.
I think you guys are right. I think the hype with Lonzo, and like you said, Jesse, Magic has already come out and, you know, heavily invested into Lonzo. So I think they're going all in. And hypothetically, if everything works out, Lonzo's this star point guard and all these other young pieces work out and they get that star in free agency, it would kind of work out perfectly. So I think, yeah, let's take Lonzo off at number two. Now on to number three, Jesse, Celtics. Who are they drafting?
Jesse, I think your Celtics stay with the man they got. I don't think they stay away. I think they get Jason Tatum again. Obviously, Tatum has played fantastic with Gordon Hayward going down and Marcus Morris missing time. He's been great. Like you said, he's played two through four. Besides Kyrie Irving, you can argue that he's been the second or third best player behind him and Horford. And Horford's dipped a little bit recently, but you know, he's been a stud. And if it wasn't for Ben Simmons, you know, he'd probably be leading or close to leading the Rookie of the Year race.
Yeah, no, I feel you there. But the problem with this is if I said that Team X, being Philly, should have taken Tatum with the first pick, I then can't also choose him again for the third pick, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, this is where this gets hairy. So I guess I've already chosen Tatum and Ball. So with the third pick, you know, revisionist history, I guess what this is, and I would say Mitchell, obviously. At the time, given realistic kind of a look back, depending on how you want to look at it, obviously the Celtics there trade down for like 10 first round picks in the future. But if that doesn't work out, they probably, you know, take a shot on Fultz, obviously. Which, yeah, then, I you think, know, who knows what happens with Kyrie Irving? It changes the entire fate of history. I don't even want to go down that road because it's too scary. So,
yeah, that's very true. I mean, since I still have Tatum available, like Corey, I think they stick with Tatum. I think it's worked out perfectly. You couldn't expect a better rookie season, especially for what they need on that team. You know, we mentioned on the last NBA outlet, Gordon Hayward going down the first, you know, first few minutes of the first game of the season, we thought the Celtics would be in trouble. They've had some great contributions from young guys like Tatum, and I think they stick with what they got.
And yeah, that's always something we talk about a lot on Celtics Express is, we, you know, looking forward to the roster and how's it going to be when Hayward comes back. And yeah, it's pretty wild dynamic in the season they've gotten off to with that injury. And yeah, Tatum's been huge.
And there's two types of rookie seasons, you know. There's the rookies that are playing, obviously, for bad teams, which normally are what you have in your lottery, or are bad teams. And they get, you know, the minutes to show themselves. The teams generally don't win. And, you know, the player has up and down, kind of like how we see with Lonzo. You know, Tatum is on one of those rare lottery teams that is not a lottery team. This is the first or second seed team in the East. And every minute you play on an NBA court, your rookie season is an important minute. And he's been fantastic, you know, shooting 50% from the field, 51% from three. You know, I can't remember the last time I saw a rookie shooting the ball that well either to start his rookie campaign.
Yeah, it definitely is remarkable. And Celtics fans obviously are super pumped about that. Number four in the draft, the Phoenix Suns. Who are they taking at four? They took Josh Jackson in the original draft, but now they have a lot of different options on the table.
See, this is where, for me, it was the biggest jump in the article. I had Kyle Kuzma, who was selected 27th. He ended up
going
23
spots.
Oh, he
looks good, Corey. He looks good, man.
And he doesn't make it out the top five in this redraft. The Suns would scoop him up. You know, the Suns already have T.J. Warren and Devin Booker. Kyle Kuzma has played some of that small ball four. And I think it would have been, you know, another great piece of that fast-paced Suns team that they're trying to build, since Josh Jackson really hasn't been impressive.
I think that's a great call. Kuzma got a little Amare Stoudemire in him as well when you watch him play. He's got the short little the flips in the paint and the turnaround, got the mean pivot, very active from, say, when he catches that ball at the elbow, pump fake and goes. Super, super athletic up and down the court. He's been awesome to watch. And I think he's – if Lonzo Ball isn't in L.A., he's a huge story there. But, I mean, what a couple of first-year players they have for sure. Also like Markkanen, who's been awesome this season. I was a big fan of his coming out. And also, who I think really fits kind of what the Phoenix Suns have done in the past, whether that's working or not, I think is very debatable. So, you know, maybe you go in a different direction, but I was a big fan of Fox coming out of the draft. His quickness is blinding. So I guess I got to answer the question. I'm having a tough time with, like, so I can just look back and say, what are the best players? Basically, we're ranking the best players from the draft. Is that it?
Some ways, but it has to be a good fit too. See, like, I mean, when I pick all my picks, I'm thinking, like, you know, would this guy work on this team? How is, you know, it benefiting?
Right. I feel like I'm cheating. You know what? I'm going to go with Kuzma as well. He wasn't top of mind kind of going into the conversation, but catching just a handful, a half a dozen Lakers games this year, he's been consistent. He's got the mindset. He's aggressive and a fantastic player. I've been really impressed with him. So I'd go with Kuzma there.
Kuzma's a great pick. He's definitely stepped up. I think the Suns at this point, you can't pass on Markel Fultz. Even though he's injured, you still, you know, going to the draft, a lot of people had him as number one, and it kind of gives him that lead guard. Obviously, they have Devin Booker, but he's not a true ball handler. So they have Fultz. Guy can get you some ISO buckets, and it gives him a nice young asset. So I think Suns go with Fultz here.
Yeah, I had Markel Fultz really drop in these in this redraft.
I still have a little bit of faith in him. I'm hoping he can come back and the Sixers didn't screw him up too bad.
No, he's done. His career is over.
Number five, the Kings. Who do we have the Kings taking?
See, and now I have the Kings getting who you mentioned just now, Jesse. I have the Kings getting Lauri Markkanen. I loved him in college. He reminded me of a great value Porzingis. You know, he could shoot. Defensively, he's been a little bit better than I thought he would be. But, you know, the Kings have that weird, you know, what are they doing out of Sacramento? Like, are they rebuilding? Are they trying to make a 8-seed push for whatever reason? But I think Lauri would have been a great recipient of playing underneath a guy like Zach Randolph and learning how to, you know, use your body down low and rebound and everything like that.
Okay, yeah. Markkanen's been awesome, and I think we're going to get into the Bulls on this edition here. And there's a direct correlation in him playing and the Bulls winning. So that's a great pick there. I obviously kind of messed up my picks earlier. I picked Fultz for the Celtics because I'm going back and forth. I'm having this internal struggle, but as we move forward with that fifth pick, since I hadn't taken him yet, I got to take Mitchell there, obviously, because he's the best on the board. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah, for me, I think I'll go with the guy who you guys just picked the pick before. I'll go with Kyle Kuzma to the Kings. So I think that works out for them.
Or it becomes the typical basketball hell, and whoever gets drafted here becomes non-existent.
Or they just draft a player that they already have, like John Collins. You know, they'll draft somebody who can't really shoot, just an inside presence. They'll just do something stupid. But
well, that's the most fascinating thing with, you know, drafting and career trajectory. And it's just like, you know, it's so much about situation and where you go and timing and who is in front of you. And I'm a firm believer there's tons of guys. Like, look at guys like Isaiah Thomas. Like, if he never went to the Celtics, you know, if he keep bouncing from the Kings to the Heat to – you know, team A, team B, unless you go to somewhere that fits your skill set and you're highlighted at the right time. And, you know, you talk about that in football as well with, say, Tom Brady getting his chance when he did, or, you know, go on down the line. That's so fascinating when you talk about fits and guys getting into systems that work, you know.
Even Victor Oladipo this season.
Perfect example. Exactly.
So, I mean, anything like that can change. And I think, like you said, the fit and the coaching staff, just your relationship with the coaching staff can make a big difference. Sure. So, obviously, anything with rookies like that. But we're going to get into something even more fun. We're going to talk about things that have been overblown. this early in this NBA season. So this is your opportunity to kind of get a hot take out there. I'll start off with saying I think it's been overblown that superstars are going to go to the Lakers this summer. The Lakers still haven't proved that thing yet, and LeBron is not going there. I don't even know if Paul George is for sure going there. Like, they still have to do something before people want to sign there.
Wait, so you said LeBron's definitely not going there? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I definitely don't think LeBron's going there. I would probably put 100. I put 100 bucks down right now.
I guarantee you he leaves Cleveland but stays in the Eastern Conference. That's my prediction.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm not even sold he leaves yet.
Oh, he's gone. I told you guys this over the summer. I'm not backing down.
I could see him leaving for sure, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he went west to another team, not being the Lakers. But that's
smart. He's too smart to go out west.
But, I mean, he could have the best opportunity if he went to the Rockets.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's a pretty good contender.
That would be his best.
I mean, he goes to the Rockets, they're legit. Yeah.
Yeah. What else you got for me that's overblown so far this season? I got a couple, so I'll let you guys hit some in there first.
Well, I think we can move right into a perfect segue. I think the story that the Rockets are going to just beat the Warriors with no problem this year once playoff time comes, I think that is way overblown. I think James Harden is a regular season player, flat out. So I think they're playing very well, but I don't think they're going to be nearly as dangerous as the record indicates once the springtime rolls around.
I like that. I mean, I can see it. I mean, obviously the Rockets have two guys, two Hall of Famers already at this point in time. You can say if they continue to play how they do between Harden and Chris Paul, who already is a Hall of Famer. You know, they haven't necessarily been healthy. Chris Paul at least hasn't been healthy for most of his playoff runs, and James Harden has to prove that he can play in the playoffs. So I understand that argument. I just think they're too polished at this point in time. But I can definitely see it being a little bit overplayed that they're going to, you know, definitely make a run.
Here's the thing with Harden. He's a regular season player because you watch games in the regular season and we see these NBA officials, and this year you've seen some calls that even more so than ever before, I think, or maybe I'm just getting older and getting more get off my lawn kind of attitude. But like some of these calls are just not even touching guys. And so when you look at James Harden playing in the regular season, his whole game is predicated on that hesitation, dribble, create contact, get the body foul, go to the basket and ones, et cetera. He uses that scare tactic for guys to give him space so he can step back three. I'm not saying he's not an amazing player and one of the top, obviously, five players in the league or top 10. But they don't call those. They don't call those fouls. And players aren't scared to be physical. And when he's matched up against, you know, premier defenders and he's taken out of the game like we saw last year, what are the Rockets? Chris Paul can't go down and score every time. I mean, what are they going to do? They're a pretty good defensive team, which I think can't be overlooked. But to me, that's something that Harden came in. To me, it's not a postseason type of game. That's all.
I think the question for the Rockets will be is, you know, directly correlated to what you just said. Obviously, Harden's got clamped up last year. Some of it was not getting free throws. It also was probably partially the defense be able to lock in on him because the supporting cast didn't hit their shots. So if Chris Paul can fill that void and not necessarily score everything, but, you know, allow the offense to still run, I think the Rockets will be good. But
How old is Chris Paul? Was he 31?
32.
Okay. Okay. And I love Chris Paul. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't a huge fan. And I watched that ESPN documentary they did about him when he was doing like the selection between teams. I don't know if you guys saw that was released over the summer. It was a short kind of like three-piece thing from ESPN, but it was like excellent and showed him working out and his thought process in deciding which team to go to. And then when he went to the Rockets. And so now I'm a fan for him. I'm rooting for him. But, you know, again, we'll see if injuries play a factor later on in the season. A lot of miles on those tires.
Yeah, no, I agree with, though, the fact that it's getting overblown that they can beat the Warriors. I think they'll give them the best matchup, but still the Warriors are the favorites at the end of the day.
Yes.
For me, I would say another thing that's probably getting overblown is Mike Conley's impact for the Grizzlies. Like, Conley is a great player, but he's not going to save the Grizzlies. He's can come back, and they're still not going to be a good team. That roster is just not good.
Yeah, I'll concur with that. I mean, obviously, Mike Conley's in like a weird thing, and like when you talk about him within the NBA sphere, it's because he has the huge contract, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he doesn't, and he's a very good point guard. Like, it's not nothing against Mike Conley, but like the money does not equal the kind of player Mike Conley is. And I mean, if you're looking at the Grizzly fan, you're saying, well, we're getting back, you know, one of the top five highest paid athletes in the league. You know, you're expecting a guy who's going to come back in and change the complexion of your team. And I just don't think Mike Conley is that kind of guy.
Yeah, Corey, exactly. I think you hit it on the head pretty much. When he got that contract, it is all this, like, no one ever mentioned Mike Conley before that. Like, you'd watch him play, like, he's pretty solid. He's a good part of a good team, et cetera. But once he got that contract, it was like you had to start saying, is he among the best point guards? And once you even kind of hear those words, once it enters one's lexicon, it's kind of something you think about. Like, is he? When, in fact, we know that that's not the case. And, you know, it's like if you buy, it's going to be 10 grand less than a Lexus, but it's the same car. You know, but people think the Lexus is better because it costs more. It's just that, you know, perception is reality. So I think Corey basically nailed on the head there.
I got another one for you. The Spurs are not a real contender.
That's disgusting and offensive.
It's true, though.
I think when you have one of the NBA's best players, obviously top two-way player in the league, aside probably from LeBron James, and, you know, the best coach in the league and an organization like that, they are very old. Who's going to step up? Aldridge having an unbelievable season. You can't count them out. Obviously, the West is so deep, and there's, what, a couple teams ahead of them, but they have – what was your point? They have no chance? Is that what you said?
No, I'm saying they're not a true contender. Like, they're not going to go to the finals.
Okay, I disagree. Because, I mean –
You think they'd be Golden State?
If the seeding can work out, which it probably won't, you know, they, you know, if the Rockets slide and the Spurs go on a run, which is not likely, so you're probably looking the Spurs at a 3 seed, beat both likely the Rockets and Warriors. So yeah, it's a long order, but maybe somehow the Rockets and Warriors meet up, they knock each other out, the Spurs make it to the finals, and they absolutely have a shot. I wouldn't call them the favorite, but to say they're not a true contender, I think, is a stretch. I generally put the top 2-3 teams in from each conference.
I mean, for me, a contender is realistically who can get there. Like you just said, it'd be highly unlikely for them to beat Golden State and Houston. They would have to get the seeding perfectly where Golden State and Houston matched up first.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if they're true contenders. I mean, I'm kind of sticky. Like, I'm a stickler when it comes to contenders. Like, as you said, the top three. Like, I don't see the Raptors as a contender. Like, I still think it's Celtics, Cavs, and then Rockets, Warriors. Like, I don't think, you know, the Spurs obviously are always going to be in the conversation. As long as Greg Popovich is coaching that team, I'm never going to say they're not at least playing for a spot in the finals. But if I had to give them, like, a percentage on their NBA finals, like, making the NBA finals, it'd be less than 10%, and it'd probably be near, you know, like, under 5%, like, 4%, 3%.
You guys, this is a team that had the Warriors on the ropes, like, until –
one game.
That was one damn impressive game.
It was, but, I mean, we've seen the Warriors get blown out.
That was one damn impressive 50.
We've also seen the same Spurs have a double-digit point lead, 20 or 30-point lead against the Warriors and lose that same lead in the game and lose the game to the Warriors. So, I mean, yeah, the Spurs definitely could probably give them a hard time, but I felt like that game was such an outlier for the fact if you look at the Warriors' shooting numbers in that game, they were just horrendous, where I don't think you'll see many first halves of them ever shooting that bad.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of good shots up with Kawhi Leonard on you.
Yeah, but you can get plenty of good shots when you have Pau Gasol on the floor and LaMarcus Aldridge who can't move with the rest of the
world. Yeah, I mean, you're right. They'll kick their ass. What do you want me to say?
But
I have one overplay. I got one overplay for you.
Okay.
I think the Thunder struggles are a little bit overplayed.
Mm.
I think I could see that.
And I the only reason I say that is because of the stat that haunts me is out of 34 players who take 15 or more shots, they have the worst three in the league in Melo, Paul, and Russell Westbrook. You know, Westbrook shooting under 40, and then Melo and Paul George are right around 40. And yes, obviously, if you watch them, they're struggling. But these are three extremely gifted basketball players. And I honestly can't sit here and say truthfully that I believe Paul George, Westbrook, and Melo are going to finish where they are shooting. Melo may finish shooting 41%. That's not out of the question because he just throws up horrendous shots. But Paul George, I expect Paul George to finish this season shooting probably around 43%, not 40. And I don't expect Westbrook to be under 40 this entire season. Like, these guys are going to start making shots, and they're going to play better basketball individually, which will help the team.
Yeah, I like that, Corey. I think the Thunder are interesting test case this year. So what are they, like 500, 15, 15?
Yeah, they're,
like
yep, that? They're 15 and 15.
Park. And so I think the biggest story, obviously, is you have kind of three different forces coming together. It's not like there was two of them and one joined. You have three all perennial all-stars, you know, at least one in the book, future Hall of Famer, and you know, probably at least one or two more. And so they all come together, and Westbrook has this game that is, you know, so unique and so commanding of everyone's attention. And then Carmelo, known as a spot-up shooter and non-defender, et cetera, not known to make other players better. Paul George, known as a great, you know, good two-way player, great offensive player, and a good finisher, et cetera. But they all come together. And I think this is a good one to bring up because I have – this has crossed my mind as well, Corey. Like, people are freaking out. Like, and then you look at their record, and you're like, oh, well, they're 500, and they're trying to fit together. I think the story is, like, long-term, who from the Thunder – somebody has to get in Russell's ear. And I love – he's this guy, and it feels like you're – it's not real life. Like, the way he jumps through people at full speed and cuts laterally and, like – you know, there's few that can really put you in awe like he does, but somebody has to talk to him. And, you know, he's going to become one of these players that's so good, but never really makes, you know, I kind of hate to use the cliche, others around him better. But the reason George and Carmelo are shooting so low is because, you know, anyone that's played basketball, it's all about rhythm, where your spots are going to be, when you need to shoot, what's going to be important, what you can do to help the team, et cetera. And, you know, I think they all do want to win at this point in their career. But I think it's up to Russell as the leader of the team and the best player, you know, to kind of figure out how to make that happen. And that hasn't happened yet. But, yeah, towards the end of the season, I expect them to be playing at a high level and potentially, you know, scare somebody. I mean, if you see them in the first round and you're a one seed and they're a four and they're hot as hell, like, that's tough, man.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. I think, obviously, like you said, the storyline of them just being new pieces together, one thing that's probably making you feel a little bit more secure about OKC is they're playing good defense. You know, they have a pretty high defensive rating. Offensively, when the game slows down in the postseason, it'll probably benefit them a lot more having all these ISO scores. So they just have to find a way to really get in the postseason and get a decent matchup in the first round. And like you said, Jesse, no one's really going to want to face a team with three stars like that going into the first round. And then they have physical dudes like Roberson and Adams, too, to make life harder.
And depending on matchups, Carmelo, you know, Carmelo's 6'8", 6'9". If he gets somebody short on him on the wing in the playoffs, like you said, when that person has to cheat off a little bit and he's got a step, like, he's going to bang 28 points on you and they're going to upset you. Sorry, and Corey, go ahead.
Just to point out what you said about their defense, Nick, like, their defensive rating is second in the NBA with 103.7, and they allowed the third least amount of points at 100.2. It's like, the defense has been fantastic to this point.
Yeah.
And I can't see three superstars, one potential Hall of Famer, and then, or one Hall of Famer and two potential Hall of Famers, you know, slipping like this all season.
And it's ironic in a way because you look at Minnesota Timberwolves with Tibbs as the coach, you're like, all right, this team will come together and play defense. They are playing terrible defense, scoring plenty of points. And then the OKC, who has all these offensive stars, aren't putting up points and playing great defense. So upside down world.
But, yeah, Roberson gets a lot of hate, but I think, like, I mean, obviously offensively he's trash, but, like, defensively, he's a huge factor, and I think he's one of those kind of hustle guys. So if he can become a better offensive player, I've always kind of thought he was a bit underrated and affects the team in a positive way.
I saw some tape of him earlier this week, and he does a great job of making himself useful even though he can't shoot by setting a lot of back picks, cutting to the basket at the right time.
Yeah.
Understands his work.
You son of a bitch. I was about to literally talk about that tweet. Like, it was a minute-long video of some guy breaking it down, like, the good things he does on offense. Yeah, huh. I was about to say that. Great, Nick, I'm glad you said that. It's spot on. He does a lot of things that don't show up on a stat sheet.
Yeah, and a lot of guys can learn from that. Obviously, I'm sure we watched some Marcus Smart tape, who's not a great shooter. He probably does a lot of similar things like that. So it's always
– yeah, and another underrated guy, I mean, Steven Adams, he's still there, right?
Yep.
I think he's a highly underrated player. A 7-foot pirate man is always helpful. And he's just, you know, he's consistent and he's mean and he's tough and, you know, he's a playoff player.
He's actually,
I like their makeup.
He actually has a career high in points, rebounds, and field goal percentage so far this year.
Look at those facts, Corey.
So I'd say he's having a pretty good year.
Yeah, no doubt.
Corey dropping the stats for us today. Well, I got another stat for you. And Jesse brought this up earlier. Chicago Bulls, 6-game winning streak. They have doubled their win total. They were at 3 wins, and then they won 6 straight, and they're up to 9. How has this happened?
Well, I mean, this answer is simple, and I'm sure this is what Corey was going to say, so I won't pretend like I'm a genius for saying this, but I mean, Nikola Mirotic, you know, his face got fixed, and he's putting up, 20 a game, and – you know, they haven't lost since he came back. So, I mean, they've beat the Celtics. They beat the Sixers. They beat some teams. And, I mean, they're pretty excited on Madison Street these days. Bobby Portis. Sorry, Corey. Bobby Portis is sick. Well, I mean, I loved him in college, watching him in the SEC. And then he came out and he's a beast. And I love to see the touch he's developed and the work ethic. I mean, you know, we could talk about his anger issues or whatever, but they say that's in the past and they're moving forward. It's crazy that these two guys have been able to come together. Like, you know, he broke his jaw 2 months ago. They're playing at this level, both pretty much leading the team. I think Portis comes off the bench most games. And
yes, I think Mirotic does
fun
too,
to watch.
Actually.
Yeah. Fun to watch.
Yeah. Definitely fun to watch. But really Mirotic, I think, you know, he's no longer a human. I think he actually became a cyborg after he was broken. And they had to just completely reconfigure him. So we're just seeing the robo version of Mirotic in action, and he's fantastic. He's been shooting lights out. It's funny because, like, even last year, I'm pretty sure he played himself, like, out of the starting rotation, and they were, like, talking about getting rid of him because he just wasn't effective. And, you know, since he got a new face, he's been fantastic. You know, so shout out to Bobby Portis for – showing us how you can take some man's game farther by just punching him in the head.
Savage, Corey, savage. Yeah. Mirotic was calling teams for offers this summer, I believe. That's how unwanted he was along the league. So, but talking about that, do you think the Bulls should try to flip him in a trade right now?
Interesting. I hadn't thought about it. I don't know what the thought process would be, given that, he's a young player with high upside in their future. You know, they've got some good young players, Jerry and Grant. Chris Dunn, the kid from Providence, who there was a ton of pressure for the Celtics to take last year. They took Jaylen Brown. Pretty good decision there. You know, you got Holiday and some other pretty promising, like, young guys. But I don't know what the thought process would be. Maybe some picks down the road, you thinking?
Yeah, I'm thinking probably maybe a pick or, like, there's just been talk about them wanting to move Mirotic because of the whole Bobby Portis and him relationship, that at some point they'd want to move him. And even Mirotic said he'd be open to a trade before he started playing really well. But he's not super young. I think he played a little bit internationally first before he came here. So he's, like, I think middle 20s. So maybe they might try to trade him. I think he might be on a one-year deal. So maybe a pick or a young player.
I mean, this ain't 18-12. Middle 20s is still pretty young, I think.
He's 26,
That life expectancy's gone up, Nick. But, no, I'm busting chops. But I hear you. And you know – thinking about it, I think you pose a pretty good argument. I mean, there's nowhere you want to be in the NBA except the top or the bottom. Being in that middle is just purgatory, right? We know that. So, you know, Bulls fans were probably looking towards some of these, Michael Porter Juniors, et cetera, coming out of college next year. And now they're trying to see, like, who's in the eighth playoff spot? Can we sneak in there? And so, you know, it's a tough spot to be. So I guess that's the call. You know, do you want to try and build for the future, or, you know, maybe get into the playoffs and keep everybody, you know, maybe the Celtics route, maybe still be a little bit relevant, hopefully make a move. But yeah, I think trading him, if you can get a high pick, his stock's probably going to be pretty high if he keeps playing this way up through January and we get towards the trade deadline. I mean, you can certainly get something from, I mean, imagine the Cavaliers if they pick up a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his per 36 minutes. and I'm currently dying on the inside. If he was playing 36 minutes per game, he'd be averaging 28 points per game and 10 rebounds and shooting 51% from the field.
You can't do that. You can't extrapolate numbers like that.
It'd be funny to see if he actually could play that amount of time and be that effective. He is their leading scorer right now through six games, being back by, you know, scoring 20 points per game in this time back. I think you're right, though, Nick. I mean, they already have a abundance of power forwards between Laurie and Bobby Portis. Mircea is kind of that odd man out. I don't know. I mean, do you really need three guys at the same position? Probably not. So, you know, why not try and get
a draft that's pick? All they got. Like, that's basically all they have.
Yeah, but like –
And then who else you got? You got, like, who's that guy?
Denzel Valentine. Yeah.
Felicio. Chris, you got the soccer player over there.
Felicio. I mean, Robin Lopez. They have, like, five guys in their front court. So I wouldn't be surprised if they wanted to move at least one of those guys.
Well, I think to hit on the other point, too, is they don't care about winning. I don't think the playoffs are really reachable. They're on some hot streak that's going to end soon.
Somebody cares about winning because I watched them play, and they're playing their balls off.
Well, I mean, the organization. I hear you.
But, I mean, if you're not on the same page, then.
And I think Mirotić, you flip him now because he's played terrible last year. He had no value. You were trying to move him. No one would take him. You try to get anything you can and try to sell him as high as you can because you don't know how long this will last. Like, he's done this in the past where he's had really hot streaks, and then he's gone completely ice cold. Yeah, exactly. So it's that six-game hot streak. That's why I'm trying to, like, pick up the phones now. But obviously with the holiday season approaching, you know, a ton of NBA fans. We're all NBA fans. What are the best gifts you can get for an NBA fan this holiday season?
Obviously flights and tickets and hotel rooms would be top of my list. A nice jersey from that player that switched teams, wink, wink, maybe a Kyrie Irving, something like that. Hayward, those are always good gifts, I think, this time of year.
What do you got, Corey?
I definitely think if tickets were to find your way to a big NBA fan, that would probably be ideal. I know that I'm not going to get NBA tickets for Christmas because the Pacers and Nets just played. So that was my best opportunity to get tickets. And I was informed that I wasn't going to be getting them. I won't be seeing my Pacers, but those are definitely like the best. There's like getting tickets and then maybe like a jersey or something like that.
Yeah, obviously. And then tickets are probably the best. Like anybody who asks me what I want, it's like, yeah, give me some tickets. Like, I'll be happy. Send me to a Nets game. It'll make my day. NBA 2K18, I think, is a great gift if they don't already have it. A great book that came out this year, Basketball and Other Things. It's been very popular. Then if your person doesn't have League Pass, you could hook them up with that.
Oh, there you go.
And it's probably like half off if you're buying it right now. It's probably 100 instead of 200. So you're looking like you're giving them a really good gift. Also,
you can just do one team. You know, you could just buy them team pass instead of the whole league pass, depending on the player.
Seriously, who buys like one team? Like, what is that?
The weirdos who don't want to watch the Chicago Bulls go on a 6-game winning streak.
Also, I've been a huge fan of, even though it's super overpriced, the NBA Nike hoodies. Just the ones that say, like, you know, Brooklyn basketball, the Nike swoosh. I think the Boston one just says Boston basketball, you know, the NBA logo, Nike swoosh. I mean, $80, but that person will be looking really nice.
No doubt.
Any other gifts that you could think of that aren't directly NBA related but would benefit an NBA fan?
Keychain. Oh, not directly NBA related?
Keychain?
Yeah, I say keychain.
How about Tom Brady's fitness app that'll only run you about $500,000?
And that are you serious? You
all about pliability and not muscle strength, but muscle endurance.
I mean,
next basketball rec basketball league.
Oh, a rec basketball league membership? Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Or a gym membership that has a basketball court.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I'll just virtually run on a court.
I'm thinking maybe some basketball kicks, too. Always great gift.
Don't forget the gift card.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with that.
At outlets of Nike, Adidas, etc.
Exactly.
We just gave away free advertising.
Nike, you can give us like 0.00001% and for your profits for today, we'll be happy.
Yeah, I appreciate that much. That's a lot.
But that wraps it up for today. Corey, Jesse, thank you for hopping on. Great show. And as always, thank you everybody for listening. And you can check out the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com.
Celtics Express. Adios.